Dear listeners, before we begin today's interview, I have some important and somber news to share. It is with great sadness that I inform you of the passing of our esteemed guest, Jim Willis. Jim passed away peacefully in his home on June 8th, shortly after we recorded this conversation. This interview, which you are about to hear, is Jim's final interview, and it now holds even greater significance as it captures his last thoughts and reflections on near-death experiences and the afterlife. Throughout our discussion, Jim spoke with a serene wisdom and a profound sense of peace. His insights and stories are now a poignant reminder of his enduring legacy and the depth of his understanding. An eternal candle has been lit on the In Memoriam section of our website, where you can find and listen to all of Jim's previous interviews. We dedicate this episode to the memory of Jim Willis, a true gentleman whose wisdom and kindness will never be forgotten. Rest in peace, Jim.
The questions you always had, the answers you were never given, the place to seek the truth. Welcome to Veritas.
Imagine standing at a crossroads, not one marked on any map, but where the known meets the infinite unknown. Today, we're venturing into one of the most fascinating terrains of human inquiry, near-death experiences. These extraordinary events have puzzled thinkers for centuries and continue to stir deep discussions across various fields, from theology to neuroscience. What occurs when life teeters on the edge and individuals report experiences that challenge our conventional understanding of reality? Are these moments mere quirks of a brain under duress, or do they offer a glimpse into a broader existential landscape? Joining us in this exploration is Jim Willis, author of Near-Death Experiences, Afterlife Journeys and Revelations. His book navigates through these profound questions, structured uniquely around the old and the new, the borrowed, and the deeply personal blues of human experiences with the afterlife. In today's conversation, we will probe the alignment between ancient narratives and cutting-edge scientific research. What can we learn from the accounts of those who claim to have seen what lies beyond? How do these experiences affect their perceptions of life, death, and what might lie in between? Tune in as we explore these deep questions with Jim Willis, examining powerful personal stories and scientific research that might just redefine the boundaries of what we believe is possible. Jim Willis is coming up next.
Welcome to the Veritas Project. If this is your first time listening, welcome home. To access tonight's full interview and all of our exclusive material, simply join the Veritas Plus family by clicking on the subscribe button at veritasproject.com. And while you're there, don't forget to check out the Veritas store for a range of great products, including focused life force energy. Experience the power of FLFE with a 15-day free trial today. No credit card required. If you're looking to get in touch with Mel, have a guest suggestion, or would like to provide feedback, simply click on the contact button on our website. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's program. And now, here's your host, Mel Hastelrich.
His website is jimwillis.net, and the latest book is titled Near-Death Experiences, Afterlife Journeys, and Revelations. I'd like to welcome Jim Willis. Hello, Jim, and welcome back. How are you?
Thank you, Mel. Good to be with you again.
Congratulations on the new book. I know it's been well-received, and you've been doing interviews multiple times a day, I hear.
Yeah. It's been something kind of ironic, as you know, we've talked in the past, you and I, about my coming out here to the woods to get away from all of the hustle and bustle and be by myself and meditate, except the fiber optic cables followed me. And I find myself now talking to probably more people than I talked to when I was working a full time. So it's a kind of an ironic thing, but I'll take it because it reminds me once again, you know, of the community that's out there, and the good work that that you do and people like you do to bring that community together, and makes us all realize we're not alone, and other people are interested in the same subjects and have questions about the same thing. So it's really nice. It's really nice to know that.
What book number is this? How many books have you written, Jim, by now?
I think this one is 23.
Wow.
And I'm in the process of doing another one for Visible Ink. Well, I've got one coming out in October. And then I'm in the process of writing one now for Visible Ink on Bigfoot sightings, believe it or not. And they've also just sent me a contract to do, after I finish Bigfoot, they want me to do one on mystic places around the world, places like the Devil's Triangle and Skinwalker Ranch and things like that. So
looks like I'll be
busy for a while.
You never cease to amaze me about all the topics that you discuss. And it's interesting that you mentioned Bigfoot, because in the 16 years I've been doing this, not once have I ever done an interview on Bigfoot. And
oh, really?
People ask me, why not? It's just one of those things that I really haven't gotten into it. But about a month ago, I had a conversation with somebody about Sasquatch. Uh-huh. Apparently, Bigfoot does not like the name Bigfoot. It's like they find it to be derogatory to them. But Sasquatch is apparently the name. And this person gave me some information that I cannot discount. So maybe when you write this book, you'll have to come back here and tell me all about it, because I'm getting more interested now.
Oh, I hope I can. Yeah, Sasquatch is the oldest name, really. It was given by the Saish Indians out in California probably thousands of years ago, not just hundreds. And so Sasquatch is the name that is, it would probably be preferred. It's really strange. I know we're not going to be talking about Bigfoot or Sasquatch tonight, but it's really strange, because when I started writing, I was a little, shall we say, skeptical, a little agnostic, because I had the big problem that most people have. There's thousands and thousands of sightings, and the evidence is piling up, and the videos, and DNA studies and possibilities. But the one big problem is we haven't found a body, yet. And until that happens, people are going to be skeptical. And I got to admit, I was somewhat skeptical myself. But boy, the more I got into it for the last couple of months now, I'm turning into a believer. I really am.
It's just, I'm thinking of the $6 Million Man TV series versus Bigfoot. I remember that episode when I was a little kid. But let's dive into NDE. You've connected dots. Many various ancient cultures. You've been around the world. You know a lot about all these ancient cultures. So I'm curious, can you elaborate on how these ancient beliefs shape our modern understanding of consciousness and the afterlife? And do they differ around the world when it comes to NDEs?
That's a fantastic question. It really is. I think that's the crux of the whole thing. When I started looking into the history of the written record of NDEs, probably the earliest written record that I could find was Socrates, or Plato rather, and he put it in the voice of Socrates, his student, and he talked about a warrior named Ur who had an NDE. And this warrior was out for a couple of days, and it is now a very famous story. He tells the story, and it's a classic of dying, and the tunnel, and the light, and the experience, and the life review, and the kind of purpose before it. And he was the first in written records that I could tell that gave what has been almost unanimous in everybody that I've interviewed and talked to, in that he didn't want to come back, but he had to. I have yet to find anybody who wants to come back after an NDE. It's just such a wonderful experience. And they talk about, the word perfect comes up, perfect love, perfect acceptance, perfect compassion. But when you want to go back even farther, of course, we can go back to the time of Plato and have a written language. But if you want to go back even farther, I've become convinced in my own mind that this goes back thousands of years. Yeah. If you go back, for instance, to the great painted caves of Western Europe, and you go back and way underground, half a mile underground, a mile underground, the shamans would have some kind of a mystical out-of-body experience, or perhaps an NDE. And perhaps they did it through mushrooms, perhaps they did it through drumming, perhaps they did it through combinations of plants, something like ayahuasca would later be. But whatever it is, they had these out-of-body experiences, and they saw different landscapes, and they saw different things, and they didn't know how to express it. And that is the big problem with NDEs. We go to a place that's beyond language, because after all, our language was invented to describe stuff on this side of our perception fence, you know, to describe reality with a small r. But we peek over that fence and we see reality with a capital R. It's much bigger than the material universe that we call reality. And they glimpse that. But when you come back from that, how do you describe it? I like to say it's kind of like anybody who's had a really vivid dream, and the dream was so real, and it seemed like you were really there, and it had a message somehow. And then you try to explain it, and you discover you can't. It sounds kind of foolish when you try to put words to it. But these shamans, I think, tried to do something else. They couldn't talk about it with language, and of course, they didn't have a written language probably either. But what they did was they climbed back into the womb of the earth, and there underground in these great caves, they would paint murals. And these murals, they would try to depict what they saw in their NDE or in their out-of-body experience. And I think that's what we're looking at. The famous pierced man, for instance, the man who is has all these spears coming out of him. It's a famous thing from Lascaux. Is a kind of a early example of the body dying, I think, and the spirit going someplace else. And then if we want to go back even farther than that, back farther than 40,000 years, we can go all the way back to the time of Neanderthal and Denisovan, because when they buried their dead, they buried them with tools. They buried them with weapons. They buried them sometimes with musical instruments. And what was the implication there? They believed that there was life on the other side, and they would need those tools. They would need those weapons, perhaps. They would want those musical instruments. The famous burial of the Neanderthal child with a baby, a doll, so to speak, carved, probably the child's favorite toy. So I think when we start talking about NDEs and what they are, I think we can go back to the very beginning of our human race, and there we have evidence, first in story, and then in artifacts, and then in paintings, and then finally in language, and it comes right up to the present time. And they're so similar. That's what gets me. The Apostle Paul in the New Testament, 2 Corinthians chapter 11, he talks about his own NDE when he was transported up to heaven. He says, whether in the body or out of the body, I don't know. God knows, he says. But I heard things and I can't even explain them because the language just falls short. And then right down to the present day, and in my own book, Near-Death Experiences, I close the last couple of chapters with an NDE of a very good friend of mine, Joe, who had a classic NDE. And when I called him and told him what I was doing and asked if I could use his story as a kind of an example to sum all these up, he said, sure, go ahead. So that's what I did. So right down from the ancient history, right down to the present, we find a similar experience, and the same images keep coming back and forth. The image of floating out of the body and seeing your body usually from above, and then going through a tunnel and seeing a light and being drawn toward the light, and the idea of acceptance and compassion and total understanding, total love, and the life review that usually comes. And then, of course, the knowledge that you have to come back. And as I said earlier, almost universally, people haven't wanted to come back. They wanted to stay there. So the experience, I think, is as old as the human race. I really do.
I think a lot of people think of these two things. They think an NDE could be your mind playing tricks, chemicals being released in your brain. Mm-hmm. Others may think it's a spiritual journey. Which one is mm-hmm. it? Is there even an answer for that question?
Back in the 70s, when I was in my 20s and just starting out as a young minister, I just got out of school. I was taking on the world, and I knew all the answers. You know, we all know all the answers in our 20s. takes us 40, 50 years after that before we figure out we don't even know what the questions are. But back in our 20s, we're fairly confident. And when I was in my 20s, back in the 70s, this was before Raymond Moody coined the term near-death experience. We didn't even have that term in our vocabulary yet until he wrote his book in 1975, Life After Life. But back then, it was a crazy thing. I don't understand myself in a way. I was a preacher who was preaching about the afterlife and preaching about heaven or preaching about angels or entities or aliens from another dimension coming into our world. And I was preaching about all this. So with one part of my mind, yeah, I don't want to say I was a believer in all of this, but I was a hoper. I hoped it was all true. But then gradually, I began to have experiences with other people. And lately, in the last 20 years, when I've had my own out-of-body experiences, I've come to believe that, no, it's not that at all. Back in my 20s, I was sure when the brain shuts down, the oxygen stops flowing, and the blood stops flowing, and our neurons don't fire anymore, and all these things are happening. That's an explanation that back in the 70s and even into the 80s and 90s, the medical establishment was fairly happy with that because it kept things on a very physical level, you know, but that never really explained at all. And there were just so many things that could not be explained. How can a person float out of their body and visualize what's going on in an OR in a hospital from the standpoint of the ceiling, for instance, looking down, hear what the doctors are saying, see what the doctors are doing? Most of us don't understand the nomenclature. We don't understand the tools they use and the procedures they follow. But they can be described perfectly by this person from a perspective of on high, so to speak. And then besides that, there are universal constants that people talk about when they talk about seeing the light and moving toward the light and all of that kind of thing. So I've changed my attitude 100%. And I began to change back in the 70s. I tell the story in the book about a woman I call Hannah. And she was in the hospital, and wonderful old lady. She was part of my congregation, just a dear woman. And she was in the hospital, and I was told that by her doctor that was probably going to be her last stop. So I got into the habit of visiting her in the hospital. And I knew that Hannah loved the old hymns of the church. So I'd take my guitar along, and I'd sing, everything from In the Garden to The Old Rugged Cross and all that kind of stuff. And sometimes the nurses would wheel other patients into the room, so we'd have a little choir going. And it was kind of fun, if visiting someone on their deathbed could be fun. But one day, I was alone in the room. Everybody out. I was just by myself. I was at the foot of her bed, putting my guitar away. And she said, who did you bring with you today? And I said, what do you mean? Who'd I bring with me? She said, yeah, well, she said, I know. Sometimes they wait for you to go. I think the music attracts them. Well, I never stopped to think that music is vibration. And vibratory forces are everything, you know, in this material universe. And she said, sometimes they wait till after you go. That's when they come through the portal. And she used the word portal. Now, I could understand if she had used the word portal if she was European, because sometimes in some countries they use the word portal instead of door. But she didn't. She said the word portal. And I didn't want to confuse the old lady by saying, oh, come on, Hannah, you're...
Thank you for listening. To unlock the full 2-hour interview, including video formats, downloads, transcripts, exclusive articles, and more, subscribe to Veritas Plus now. Gain access to our entire archive dating back to 2008. Just click subscribe at veritasproject.com. To listen to the rest and access all of our exclusive material, head over to the Veritas Plus member section or click the subscribe button at veritasproject.com. Don't forget to visit the Veritas store for a range of great products, including focused life force energy. Experience the benefits with a 15-day free trial of FLFE today. No credit card required. If you'd like to get in touch with me, be a guest on the program, have a guest suggestion, or want to provide feedback, just click the contact button on our website at veritasproject.com. Thank you for listening to The Veritas Project, because you don't want to believe, you want to know. What are you waiting for? Subscribe now at veritasproject.com.